Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish reading a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And today's episode will probably be quite short because I don't have a whole lot to say about this book. The book is called Borderline, the Acadia Project number one by Michelle Baker. And the reason I'm reviewing this, or the reason I chose to read this, is that I looked at the Hugo Award nominees and the Nebula Award nominees for this year, and I realized that of the, I think, six books that have been nominated for the Nebula Award, I'd already read four of them. So I thought, well, hey, that's just two more books. I will let the Nebula Awards guide the jury or the voters guide my reading this year, and because there's only two extra books. And so I think those will be the next two books that I review here on the podcast, which I think is then now three Nebula Award nominees in a row with Updraft. That's the reason why that made my reading list or to-read list last year or the year before or whenever it was. And the book is it's a fantasy book. It's an urban fantasy book. And I must admit, I'm not that interested in urban fantasy. I don't ever find it particularly interesting, like just the overall idea of we're in our modern, normal modern world, or whatever the world is, plus vampires, or plus fairies, or plus werewolves, or plus whatever it is, whatever magical beings that you want to add in there. I don't always find that, you know, conceptually interesting. And whenever it is explored, I very rarely find it kind of intellectually satisfying of what happens. Unfortunately, with the actual setup of this book, I have the same complaint. However, I did actually quite enjoy this book, but not because it was an urban fantasy book, just because it was some interesting characters and making interesting decisions, which I'll get onto in a second. So over here on Goodreads, it says, a year ago, Millie lost her legs and her filmmaking career in a failed suicide attempt. This is pretty much set out at the very start. And I went into it not really even knowing that it was an urban fantasy, except that the person, the front cover on the Audible book is pretty much someone with fairy wings or something. So I was like, okay, it's probably got something to do with magic and fairies. And so the opening kind of twist of it didn't really give that much away. She says, Millie lost her legs in a filmmaking career in a failed suicide attempt. Just when she's sure the credits have rolled on her life story, movie reference, she gets a second chance with the Arcadia Project, a secret organization that polices the traffic to and from a parallel reality filled with creatures straight out of myth and fairy tales. And that is pretty much it. There is a Men in Black style organization, so when there's crossover between our world and the fairy world, they have to stay within the bounds of certain cities. They're not allowed to go outside. I think that's the conceit in Men in Black, is that everyone has to stay within Manhattan or within New York City. Yeah, I guess it's New York City because they go to Queens and stuff. Same kind of thing here, and there's three different offices or three different portals through between the fairy world and our world in the United States. There's one in New York, one in New Orleans, which is always a kind of spiritually mythic fairy kind of place in these books, and Los Angeles. And I was just actually scrolled down just a second ago to see what some other people said about this. Lindsay rated it 5 stars. He says, basically Men in Black with fae and magic instead of aliens. Yeah, but there's someone else said it's part La La Land with a dash of Harry Potter. And unfortunately, La La Land is one of my big disappointments. Me and Juliana went to see that movie and walked out of it halfway through because it just really wasn't for us. This kind of treads the other side of that. It is about movie making in Los Angeles, and they do go to the same place. They go along the same freeways, and they go to the Griffith Observatory, and they go to the Warner Brothers Studios or whatever whatever the studios are. And they go to those same places as in La La Land. Whereas in La La Land, I just wanted to punch myself in the face all the time. Because it's sort of like, oh yeah, two white guys who can't sing and dance somehow make it in a singing dancing movie, and it really, really, really annoyed me and Juliana. This book, though, the setting, like the main character, like what could be like, okay, La La Land crossed with Men in Black, dash of Harry Potter, whatever, suddenly comes alive with the main character, Millie, in that the book is called Borderline, not because there's a borderline between the fae world and the fairy world and the and our current world, our normal world, is that she has borderline personality disorder. And I haven't read many books that I can think of with people who have borderline personality disorder. Of course, they kind of, people like that do pop up in books, but often they are maybe villains or complicated characters that the main protagonist has to kind of interact with. They're more antagonist roles quite often, where I found it quite interesting as an exploration of that kind of personality type. However, I have literally no experience, first-hand experience, or even second-hand, or even third-hand experience. Well, I guess this is third-hand experience, but of anyone with a borderline personality disorder. I mean, sometimes I see it in comedy circles and performing circles. You see someone and you just go, okay, that person is probably unwell in a certain way and they can't deal with it. And they kind of get rewarded for their extreme personality on stage. And I've never really felt that healthy. But that's pretty much as close to it as I've come. So I can't say if this is a good exploration of borderline personality disorder or accurate or interesting if you have experienced or read first-hand or third-hand or even fictional accounts like this. I don't really know much about it. However, I found it quite interesting. And the idea that when you... like it comes out later in the book, which is I kind of worked out pretty early on that the reason why this Arcadia project picks people who have different personality and mental issues to be to be in the Arcadia project is if they don't want to be in it anymore and they just start telling people, oh yeah, the fairies exist and I saw werewolves, and people just go, oh well, you've just got some personality disorder or this kind of disorder or that kind of disorder, and we can just put you back into the home, put you back into rehab, put you back into the institute where you came from, where we rescued you from in the first place. And you can just go back there and everybody can stop talking about you or can stop listening to you and just, you know, assign it to your mental illness or whatever like that. So I found that interesting. And Millie, like I say, it's not that she has just got borderline personality disorder, is that she had a failed suicide attempt where she jumped from a seven-story building, hit a tree on the way down, which broke her fall enough, but didn't break her fall enough to not smash up both of her legs. And then have her legs amputated. You know, it talks quite a lot about how she's got an above knee amputation on her left leg, I think, and then on her right leg she's got a below knee amputation. And a lot of this book, like the constraints on the main character, is someone who is mentally disturbed, mentally disabled, but also very severely physically disabled, and has to, you know, have issues of walking and just mobility. However, she does have these steel implants or these steel plates put in her brain and in her different parts of her body where she's been smashed up and has got plates inside her. That does give her some defense against some magic, because it turns out steel and iron is the thing that kind of stops some fairy magic happening. And because she's got that inside her body, it lets her, you know, she's mostly disabled, but in some way she is slightly more capable than people who do have all legs but don't have any metal in her body. So that character I enjoyed reading, even if she's not a nice character all the time. It's certainly an interesting character. And often in stories, someone will do something, you'll just go, no, that's really stupid. Why did he do that kind of thing? Why did he suddenly get angry at that person? Why didn't you just talk about it? And it often annoys me when there's like the idiot plot, like the plot is only moved forward by people being stupid. But when someone literally has mental health disorder and other things, it's sort of like, okay, it's understandable, even if it's sort of like, why did you do that? That was a stupid thing to do. Of course it was a stupid thing to do, but sometimes if you've literally got mental illness, you can't always be completely in control. And I found that an interesting way of moving the plot on at some points where normally I'd be kind of unhappy with that kind of plot development, was in this book, I was just like, okay, I get what you're going with that. I understand why that's happening. So the other characters that Millie interacts with, a lot of them do have different either mental illnesses or physical disabilities and different issues. There's people who have had violent pasts, but they've been saved or they've been recruited into the Arcadia Project to give them a second chance in life. The Arcadia Project, their front is that, oh, actually what we do is we help people with mental and physical disabilities and different issues in that way, help them get jobs in the movie industry. So there's lots of connections with the movie industry here as well. And the fairy people are all beautiful and they work, and some of them are actors and some of them are agents and some of them are directors, or some of them work with directors. So that kind of, you know, it's understandable that all the beautiful people in LA are beautiful for a reason because they've got fairy blood, or they, you know, work with fairies and stuff. So there's lots of different things where people go around the town. But what I'm saying is, again, what me and Juliana, one of the many things that we hated about La La Land was it's sort of like, oh yeah, we've got all these interesting characters, and at the start it's very diverse, and there's that opening scene on the motorway, and it starts off with a black woman singing, and then a Latina man, and then, you know, all the kind of diversity that you have in LA, and it's sort of like, okay, let's forget all of that, let's represent the dream of Los Angeles. We won't concentrate at all on all of the diversity there, we'll just have these two, like, the two whitest actors we can possibly find and just put them in the movie. And here there is a lot more diversity. You've got people from all over the country, different nationalities, people who are like illegal immigrants and other people who've never been registered even though they live there. I don't need to go too much into those different characters, but it's just it's just a lot more interesting to read about the LA experience, even though I've got like a negative interest in stories about movie making in Los Angeles and Hollywood and stuff like that. I actually don't like those stories. I don't like experiencing those stories, especially in movie form. Movies about making movies in LA. It's just sort of like, I don't know. It's just awful. I just don't like that style of movie making and the choices that movie makers make when they know that they're making a movie about making a movie and telling a story about their friends making movies for their friends. I just find it kind of repulsive in some ways. But some of the repulsiveness of, oh, and then I needed to meet with this agent and this person gave me the script and then I met this director, all of that stuff, which I normally hate. In this book, I found it passably bearable because of the interesting cast and the characters that were going through it. What else have I got to say about this? What was I going to read down a bit as well? Arcadia. Oh yeah, one other thing. Bring up my notes. One thing that I was struggling a bit with, I said, oh, it's called Borderline, and I was like, Arcadia Project. I was like, where do I know the word Arcadia from? Arcadia. Why is Arcadia familiar to me? And then I realized I was working on a cruise ship, a P&O cruise ship, called the P&O Arcadia. I was literally on the Arcadia when listening to the Arcadia Project audiobook, and I thought, okay, that's quite an interesting little coincidence. But it caught me out. I was like, where do I know that name from? Okay, let me go to my notes here. I quite liked a lot of the writing and the storytelling. At one point, the main character, Millie, she wakes up and there's sunrise, and it's sort of like, oh, I love waking up to a sunrise because I love a day I haven't screwed up yet. And I kind of, again, all of the style of the writing, it's all told from Millie's first person point of view. I just really, really enjoyed it. I didn't make many notes of them, but just like all the time, so many great turns of phrases about what happens, you know, and about the different feelings. And that, like I say, is kind of a way into reading about a mental disorder, a mental disability, in a way which I guess you can do so much better with written fiction. I mean, I was listening to this as an audiobook, but again, I was having someone say in these, but it's sort of like the power of writing, of like constructing a sentence in a way which I don't expect, or like I say, a turn of phrase which you wouldn't normally apply to something. And I wish I'd have made sort of like more notes or more references or more quotes as I was going through. Hey, maybe actually on the Goodreads page, quotes. There's not actually a good quote about that, somewhere like that. And also using magic to cope with some of these mental disabilities and personality issues, and some of the creative ways that you go, oh, that's what this thing is for, and that's what that magic spell is for. I don't need to go into too much of it, but some of those things are kind of like, by recasting some of these in a different way, by the writing style and using magic to talk about mental disabilities. Again, in a very interesting way that happens. This is actually, turns out to be the first book in a series, Borderline, Arcadia Project, book number one. I really hope that the second book follows the story of Gloria, who in this first book is is kind of like one of the main, it's someone that Millie has to work with, who she immediately hates, and she is someone who has had a violent past, and she is a dwarf? I don't know. Again, it's difficult for me to remember all of the politically correct words. A little person. So someone who's trying to make it in Hollywood, not being a short actor, but actually being, I think she does script writing or script supervising. That's her kind of like one of her jobs or whatever. But yeah, she also works in the Arcadia Project. A very unlikable character all the way through this book. But again, sometimes I was like, is she really unlikable, or is it just a personality clash between her and Millie? And I think both. I think she is unlikable, but I would kind of like, even though it's kind of ambiguous what happens to her at the end of this book, I kind of hope that she is in the next book. I think that would be an interesting way to take these series. I don't think I want to spend any more time with Millie, who is the main character, but some of these other characters I could definitely spend some more time with. However, I do have issues again with sort of like that this is an urban fantasy book. I just don't find explorations of fairy magic in the real world that interesting. And sometimes I find it a bit insulting in that there's this thing where you have a double, or you have a partner. Like, there's you and you've got like this soulmate who is also a fairy person or some kind of mythical human, or mythical, not human, like an elf or a... or a fawn, or a werewolf. Not many werewolves in this book, but you know, all these different kind of fairy people. And you have these, and if you get together and work with them, you get this kind of inspiration. And what I dislike about books like this is that it kind of posits that human beings aren't capable of creativity, or the best people in the world aren't capable of what they do just off their own talents and experience and just hard work that goes into it. So there's this one character who is pretty much a Steven Spielberg type character of someone who has made amazing movies and everyone loves his movies. But it turns out the only way he's been able to make all those amazing movies this whole time is that he works closely with a fairy person. And I'm just like, oh, I think that's a real pity, because it kind of detracts from human genius in the sort of like, oh, humans aren't capable of this. It actually takes magic to do that kind of stuff. But I'm like, no, but there isn't magic in the real world. So I'm just saying it kind of feels like it's diminished as it goes through. I do like that this book doesn't just say, oh, let's just talk about this movie or this star or this actor or this director, you know, just taking them from our world, our real world, and just kind of like using references to those things. Like I was saying about this kind of nerd reference form of science fiction or fiction these days, like Ready Player One and those other books where they just like list a sort of like, this could have very easily been like, okay, now let's talk about Spielberg, or let's talk about George Lucas, and let's talk about this. But this book actually puts in the work to kind of say, no, there are these classes of genius actors and great directors and great scriptwriters who do this kind of work. But it, again, it says, but those people need help from fairies because humans aren't good enough, I guess. I don't know. I kind of dislike it when human achievement is denigrated by saying, oh, it must have been magic. It's like saying, oh, the people who built the pyramids, they must have been aliens, because it's impossible for people to have built the pyramids. It's like, turns out, no, humans are actually quite clever. And even 6,000 years ago, humans were pretty clever, or however old the different pyramids are that people talk about in that way. So, yeah, let's quickly talking about here, looking on goodreads.com, Lindsay rated it 5 stars. Talked about Men in Black as well, but that was one of my first thoughts when I started reading it. Jenny from Reading Envy rated it 2 stars. My decision not to finish this Nebula Award-nominated book has more to do with me than my reading preferences than the book itself. I actually really liked it in the first 50 pages. The writing is fine, and Michelle Baker has interesting characters and a memorable setting. The setting is pretty good. The house is pretty cool. But as soon as it got to the first mention of Fae, and this is a fairy word, it was like my brain shut down. I was like, yeah, I pushed through it, but I don't think I need to spend more time in that way. David Agranoff rated it 2 stars. I gave up. I made it to page 150 or so. I didn't like the writing of the characters. It was part Fringe, part La La Land with a dash of Harry Potter. This got nominated for Hugo? Oh, is this a Hugo-nominated book? I thought this was a Nebula Award. Maybe I'm getting mixed up with the different awards that this is. No, it'll say here, won't it? It'll say, Nebula Award nominee for Best Novel 2016. Do you think if I click on that, I'll get the other books in that list? So this, I listened to it as an audiobook, and it's read by, let me go over here and find it, read by Arden Hammersmith. And at the start, as soon as she started speaking, I was like, oh, I'm maybe not going to do this, because she's kind of got like, I'm not really how to describe it, kind of a duller voice than normally I would get, sort of like it's kind of a young American female voice. And I'm like, okay, I get the reason why that was picked, that narrator was probably picked for it, but it felt a little bit monotone. But soon I realized, oh, actually, it would be too much if somebody with borderline personality disorder or some other kind of mental issues, if it was someone who would put on too many voices or too go over the top, it could have been, oh, crazy, crazy like this, but it was kind of kept kind of more flat. It felt more like so if someone's got some bipolar disorder and they're going through a manic stage and they're like, ah, crazy, crazy like this, and then they go into kind of like the depressive stage, and it felt like it was weird how I kind of liked it more that it stayed more on the depressive side of that. And I know that that's probably a weird thing to say, but like it was a toned down audiobook, which for the mental illness issues that were being portrayed, I think it being toned down was actually a good choice. And I quite liked it. It says 11 hours, 7 minutes audiobook here. And I would recommend it as an audiobook if you don't want to actually spend time reading the pages. But it's not a long book at all. It says paperback, 400 pages here on Goodreads. So, yeah, if you want this audiobook for free or any other audiobook for free, check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And using the SFBRP code there gets you one free audiobook when you sign up for a plan, or just as a test. Even you don't even have to sign up for a plan, you can get an audiobook for free. If you continue with the plan, you can get either the Platinum plan, which is what I do with 2 audiobook credits per month, or the Gold plan, which is 1 audiobook credit per month. That's probably enough for most people. But it's not just that you get any book. If you don't like the book, you can say, hey, can I have my credit back on a book that I do like? For example, if Jenny from Reading Envy or David Agronoff said, I don't like this book, I only made it to a page 150. If this was an audiobook from Audible, they could have said, I don't like the book, give me my credit back, or let me spend my credit on a book that I will really enjoy. And no question asked with Audible, that's what it allows you to do. So it's actually, you pay for a book that you like every month, not for just a book each month. So audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Check out Audible if you want the audiobook. So that brings me to, I think, pretty much all I want to say about this book. Because, yeah, fair is. Okay, Nebula Award. Oh, it's Nebula Award winners. I thought I might be able to quickly just find a list of the Nebula Awards now. See which is the book that I'm going to now download and listen to about the award. 2016 nominee. Is it 2016? Is that the book that... Oh yeah, here we go. Novel, All the Birds in the Sky, which me and Juliana read and reviewed. Borderline by Michelle Baker. The Obelisk Gate by N.K. Jemisin, which I quite, I liked. I didn't like it as much as the first book in that series. What was it called? The Broken Earth series? No, what was it called? Can't remember what the first book was. Nine Fox Gambit, which was one of my favourite books of last year by Yoon-Ha Lee, which I... rereading. Me and Juliana might talk about it again on another book. Oh, and here we go. Everfair by Nissi Shawl. I have no idea what Everfair is about, but I will now download that audiobook and listen to it over the next few days and review it next week, and we'll see how that goes. And I might do the same with the Hugo Awards, because again, I think there's only one book in the Hugo Award list that I've not read, or at least not tried reading yet. So, that's it. What else do I have to say? Yeah, become my friends on Goodreads so I can also easily see what books you're reading, and if I've read a book, what you think about it. Go to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and discuss the podcast and books you'd like to see me review on there as well. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at Luke Burridge there. Also, definitely check out my YouTube channel. YouTube is where I do my video blogging, and I just uploaded today one of my favorite videos in a while, where I am traveling around Wadi Rum in Jordan, which you probably don't know why you know that if you saw pictures of it, but if you have seen the movie The Martian, I go to some of the locations that they used in The Martian and travel around that way. And also the Jeddah, planet of Jeddah in Rogue One. I didn't know it when I was there last time, but they filmed Rogue One. So this time I found Jeddah City, the rock where Jeddah City is, where that gets struck by the Death Star. Spoilers in Rogue One. So that kind of thing. And get attacked by a military helicopter. Mostly with wind, but it was pretty fun, and some camel stuff and trucks and things like that. So check out my latest vlog. I think you'll enjoy it. That's it from me, though. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I reply to every email that I get, so thanks for everyone who stays in touch that way. That's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
No, wait, I knew I'd forgot something. 2.5 stars.